This podcast is brought to you by Lanco Group, your business partner for engineering solutions. You are listening to FNR Football Nation Radio.
You're listening to Afternoons on FNR Football Nation Radio with Adriano De Monte and Rick D'Andrea.
Hello there and welcome to Afternoons here on FNR Football Nation Radio, your voice of football in Australia and right around the world. Adriano Del Monte and Rick D'Andrea, as always, to take you through the latest news, views and analysis in the world of football. Paris Saint-Germain in the world of football have been eliminated from a competition, Rick. First time in a long time that they've been eliminated this early from a competition. But find out what took place in a cup competition in France very shortly. We've got some results from around the grounds. We have some big transfer movements, particularly at Bayern Munich. A revolution well and truly underway there as another Bundesliga star makes another move to the Bavarians. Munich just seemed to find a way to sign the hottest property in German football, and they've added a French World Cup winner to their squad. Find out who that is shortly. Juventus have, they're nearing the signing of a star Welshman. Find out who that is very shortly. And some news on the coaching front.
Big money, that is. Good afternoon.
Big money. And plenty more to come there. There's action, Copa del Rey action this morning that we'll review, and plenty of other transfer stories as always. But, Rick, as you do, my favourite part of the day, a quick summary of what's taken place in the last 24 hours, and then we'll get into it.
We'll do, and thank you again, Adriano. Good afternoon to all our listeners. As George has come through, he's probably stolen the opening story of the night, or the afternoon, I should say. City hit 9 past Burton. Yes, they did, and they've all but confirmed, in my eyes, their spot in the Carabao Cup final with a ruthless...
You'd think so.
Well, there are probably some Burton Albion fans out there that are saying, you know what, we'll go through 10-9 in the second leg. So let's wait and see. But nonetheless, they are through with a ruthless 9-0 win over Burton Albion. The scoreline is the highest ever victory under coach Pep Guardiola's reigns across all his clubs that he has ever coached. Gabriel Jesus claimed 4, while De Bruyne, Foden, Zinchenko, Walker, and of course Riyad Mahrez all found the back of the net. Here's my favourite story of the morning / afternoon. Guingamp have defeated Paris Saint-Germain 2-1 in the Coupe de Ligue. 2 converted second-half penalties saw the team that is currently bottom. Yes, let me repeat this again. Bottom of Ligue 1 topple the reigning champions. That ends PSG's run of 45 unbeaten cup games across both the Coupe de France and the Coupe de la Ligue. Other results from the competition this morning saw Monaco advance 8-7 on penalties with a nice goalkeeper winning moment. And, of course, Bordeaux beat Le Havre 1-0. Real Madrid have beaten Leganes 3-0 in the Copa del Rey, while Getafe were the only winners from this morning's action in the competition as they defeated Valladolid 1-0. Girona and Atletico Madrid played at a 1-1 draw, while Villarreal and Espanyol played at an entertaining 2-2 draw. In Asian Cup results, Japan have made to work very, very hard for their 3-2 opening win over Turkmenistan, while Uzbekistan defeated Oman 2-1. Qatar, a team that was very, very popular in yesterday's show under coach Felix Sanchez. We did a small little feature on them yesterday. If you haven't seen it, do check it out. It's on our Facebook and across all our social media platforms. They had a nice 2-0 win over Lebanon. And that transfer story that you mentioned at the top of the show, speculation surrounding Benjamin Pavard is finally over. The Stuttgart defender has signed a 5-year, €35 million move to Bayern Munich, effective July 1, 2019. Adrian, that is all the news at the moment going around. There is many other things that we will be talking about today.
We will.
Back to you.
Nicely done. As always, we'll start with what took place on the pitch. George is very hot on the Facebook Live today. If you are with us on Facebook Live, do say hello, but all the news is there. In case you missed it, PSG crash out. Jesus to the fore with 4 goals. And we remember Torino's Immortals and their English coach who were all killed in an air crash in 1947, of course. So, look, we've got plenty of transfer stories to come, but let's start with what took place on the pitch. The Burton match. you're joking, obviously, that they can overturn that in the second leg. But 9-0, get this. Burton's 9-0 defeat is the heaviest League Cup defeat by any side since Liverpool beat Fulham 10-0 back in 86. So it's the largest ever margin defeat in the semi-final of the competition, but the largest defeat in any stage of the competition since September 1986. Manchester City 9, Burton Albion 0.
I think we need to repeat this again. Manchester City 9. Yes, count them on two hands. There you go, I can't even do
nine.
That. There you go,
9. 9-0, Rick. 7-0 against Rotherham in the
FA Cup.
In the FA Cup. 9-0 here in the League Cup. They have a point to prove, and I think they are fuming after that bad patch. I think Guardiola is anyway, after that bad patch they had where they dropped 3 games in 5 EPL games. Obviously, they've bounced back with that win against Liverpool, another win in the league. Now, these two big wins to kickstart 2019 in cup competition. I think it's more of a point to prove for them. They've fielded very strong sides in both of these two cup outings. Again, their depth is such that any team they field will be strong. But again, putting 9 past an opponent, putting 7 past an opponent, 16 goals in 2 games, I read more into it than just heavy defeats against lowly opponents.
Well, I was going to say, I think it's more the latter than it is the former. So I'm a little bit against you in there. You can't you can't really compare what Burton are League One. So they're essentially what? Div 3, the third division in England, up against one of the powerhouses in European football, let alone English football.
That's true. But Rick, again, this is the biggest win since 1986 in cup competition. This is an opportunity for City to, again, they're not taking much away from this game, but they're making a statement. They are making a statement. You don't see results of this magnitude. We saw Arsenal defeat Blackpool 3-0 in the FA Cup. We saw Chelsea defeat Nottingham 2-0. We saw Tottenham have a 7-0 win of their own, but we don't see too many big wins like this, and particularly two in the space of 4 days.
Could this have been done on purpose, not because of what you've just alluded to, but because maybe Manchester City might want to sort of experiment a little bit more with the lineup to give their players 3 days rest come the second leg of the semi-finals? Could that also be a factor that does come into play? Because as we've talked about over the last few days, or the last week or so, we know that Man City are playing every 3 days. Maybe they want to maybe rotate the team very, very heavily. Maybe they go to the third string. Maybe they go to the under-19s.
For which game?
For the second leg against Burton Albion, just to give...
They didn't need to put 9 past them. That's
they did.
That's a statement.
Absolutely they did.
No, they didn't. You know that if this was...
If these were teams
from different competitions, normally a game like this in a respectful manner might be 3, 4, 5. They've put 9 and 7 in 4 days. I think it's a point to prove for Guardiola, but you're right. They've got bigger games to come, and they're going to need to be ready, and maybe they can take something away from these big results. Peter's come through on the Facebook Live and said, love to know what player value is worth at Burton v City. I'm sure that's somewhere in terms of the value of one City player in comparison to the whole team of Burton, but I'd be confident in saying, Peter, without actually knowing the actual fact, that one of City's best players, pick any one of their goal scorers, would be worth significantly more than the entire Burton lineup.
Maybe Zinchenko might be the only one.
But aside from him. De Bruyne, for example, the opening goal scorer, he'd be worth, 70, 80 million euro, and he'd be probably getting paid more than the entire team of
pretty
Burton
much.
Albion.
Yep.
Oh, there's no doubt at all about that. It's always interesting when you break that down, and such is the dividing, the difference in class there, that a 9-0, it does make sense, but again, you don't see these results. We haven't seen them for 33 years now. It's a big statement by Man City, who have a very tough schedule ahead. You are right in saying their second leg, they'll field a fourth-string side. You and I might be able to get a game, Rick.
Hey, maybe we get to go to England, and maybe we get to go experience a little bit of the English weather, and maybe we get to go and play it at Burton.
I don't think that's going to happen. But
come on. You got my hopes up.
Well, 9-0.
No, you're right. You're right.
They're in the final.
Yep.
They're in the final.
Well, let's
hope
tonight.
Who awaits? Tottenham or Chelsea?
Tottenham or Chelsea. Well, at the moment, you'd say Tottenham because they do take a 1-0 lead. But Tottenham, as we have been aware over the last couple of years, have bottled it up from these sorts of situations. I keep thinking back to the Champions League and what happened there. They did have the lead, unfortunately, 1-0 against Juventus, round of 16, second leg. And 2 goals 70 seconds later, unfortunately, kicked them out. So Tottenham, yes, at the moment, but I'm not writing Chelsea off at all.
I want to reference a Facebook Live question that we had a couple of days ago that we referenced also yesterday, but about Tottenham's best success for silverware this season, how important that League Cup semi-final. Second leg is against Chelsea, where they do hold that one goal lead, knowing that if they score an away goal, Chelsea require three. Tell me, is this Chelsea's best opportunity for a piece of silverware as well? Obviously, into the round of 32 in the Europa League, they are the favourites to win the Europa League. But this is a pretty good opportunity for Sarri in season number one to win some silverware.
No, you're right. I think, well, with Chelsea, like you just mentioned, I still think the Europa League is their best chance. I think they're just going to be far too strong compared to everybody else across the competition, the 32 teams.
You think it's a better opportunity than
I think it still is. It is. Whereas here, getting past Tottenham that are in such good form, and getting past, you would now say, with certainty, Manchester City, I think it's just might be that little bit of a too big a climb ultimately. I'm not saying that I'm not disputing and I'm not going to have a go with all the other European teams, but I still think the quality that Chelsea do offer in the Europa League, even though there are some very, very, very strong teams in there, I still think it's that little bit above the rest of the competition.
Okay. Well, they do go into the second leg 1-0 down against Tottenham. They know that they need to score a goal, obviously. They need to get the win. A long way to navigate themselves through the round of 32 of the Europa League all the way to the final, but they are favourites. And I'm with you. I think that they've got a very good chance, and particularly if they miss the top four in England, how important would that be to get themselves into the Champions League by winning the Europa League? And we know that Sarri will have one eye on that, but that's the latest out of England.
And they won't be doing what Marseille did last season.
No.
No chance. No. If they're in the final, they will be going for the win and not relying on other teams and results in the league to try and qualify automatically.
Of course, Marseille losing the final of the Europa League, and then unfortunately just missing out on the top three in France, which is Champions League football.
Just so they choked on the final day, if you recall.
They did. And then they needed to rely on other results.
And that was not going to happen.
Oh, it didn't happen, did it? Nope. City 9, Burton 0. Incredible. Coupe de la Ligue, Rick. So there was one quarter-finalist, confirmed. Strasbourg against Lyon. We brought you that 2-1. Strasbourg knocking out Lyon. Would you believe it? One of the other giants, or the giants of French football, they're out. Recap exactly as per your news headline there. PSG 1, Gangomp 2. Gangomp in this game, 3 penalties awarded, 1 missed, 2 converted late on. First and foremost, what on earth are PSG doing giving away 3 penalties in a game? I don't have the stat in front of me, but I dare say there haven't been too many games where one team has given away 3 penalties.
No, I wouldn't have the stat in front of me either, but they've given away 10 penalties all season. 4 have been by one person. That person gave away 2 this evening.
That is incredible.
Thilo Kerrer.
The new signing.
Not a good look at all for him.
Rick, 3 penalties in one game. I cannot recall ever seeing that in any game ever.
Not off the top of my head.
A penalty shootout is the only time I've seen that.
We're not counting those. You know, we saw plenty of those at the World Cup. We don't have to go far. We even saw one this morning, Monaco Ren. We'll talk about that a little bit.
3 penalties in the space of 30 minutes. That's just not good enough from, well, clearly the best defence in Ligue 1. And they've failed here, as you said, very elegantly off the top, against the bottom side. This is a top v bottom clash in terms of Ligue 1 positioning, and Gangomp have done what no one had imagined they would do. And it's not as if PSG had a weakened side. They had Neymar, Di Maria, Mbappe.
There were basically 9 of 11. You take out, there was no Marco Verratti, who was on the bench, and there was no Edison Cavani, who was also on the bench.
Oh, well, still a good side.
Areola is the other one you can throw up, but essentially he's the number one there, so we know that Buffon is there for the time being, but he won't ultimately hold.
But Rick, off the bench, they brought Dani Alves, Cavani, Verratti. That's a full strength side.
Yep.
So they were at full strength, and they've lost at home 1-2 to Gangomp. It's quite incredible.
Last loss in the Coupe de la Ligue since 2012.
Wow.
The other one, because they're
so they've won every Coupe de la Ligue since 2013. Then.
Correct. They've won the last 5, up until now. Yeah. And when you also include the Coupe de France and the run they had, so the Cups run, 45 games unbeaten.
Wow. Across all Cup competitions.
Across all Cup competitions, the 2 Cups. That says a lot. That goes to show how dominant this team has been. But it's going to be interesting now to see how PSG go, now that they won't be able to win a domestic treble anymore.
That is true.
Is something that we all pretty much would have thought was going to happen. It was going to be a walk in the park. And Gangomp, the team that's only won 2 league matches all season long, have dethroned them.
That is incredible.
I still can't believe we're saying this. Gangomp has defeated PSG in a Coupe de la Ligue match and thrown them out. I really can't believe it.
And I was right the first time I said, they're through to the semis. These, so Strasbourg, have been drawn by Gangomp in the semi-finals of this competition. I think that's very good for French football, mind you. I think it's good to see PSG and Lyon not in the semi-final. The draw still yet to be done for that stage. But they are there, and they are joined by two sides, the other two sides who played this morning, who won, who aren't in good touch in Ligue 1 either this season. So we have Strasbourg, we have Gangomp, Bordeaux, who have had a very difficult topsy-turvy season. They had a 1-0 win over Le Havre with a goal 20 minutes from time. But the other one is Monaco. So in terms of Ligue 1 positioning, you've got the two bottom sides in Ligue 1 still in contention.
Then you've also got Strasbourg in 7th. This is what I was just trying to pull up now. And who was the last one? Bordeaux. Bordeaux 13th. So if you go off the latter positions, well, you'd say Strasbourg should win the Coupe de la Ligue.
Strasbourg in the face.
Should. But if you go on, obviously, reputation, Monaco's still in the hunt. But you know what? Gangomp's just knocked off the title holders in the team that's number one in Ligue 1.
Monaco have made a whole host of signings. And they're all in the mix. They are all in the mix. The interesting thing with the match between Monaco and Rennes was that the shootout was an epic shootout.
8-7 is what it ultimately
was. 8-7. It went to the 11th penalty for it to be decided. You very rarely see an 11 penalty shootout. The goalkeeper with the winning goal after the opposing goalkeeper missed. That's all we like to see.
Can't wait for these ones.
So Monaco go through 1-1 after normal time and 8-7 in penalties. Quite incredible. Both teams only scoring. It was 3-3 after the 5 and very entertaining stuff. So Monaco, Gangomp, Strasbourg, Bordeaux into the semi-finals of the Coupe de la Ligue. I think it's a good thing for French football.
Just to vary it up and just to see somebody else lift the title. It's going to be very, very exciting.
So PSG's run of 5 straight wins there come to an end. They can't win the domestic treble now. They will win Ligue 1. They will likely win the Coupe de France. They will likely respond very heavily this weekend when French football resumes. But now the Champions League just becomes all the more important.
The other thing that I forgot to mention with these 4 teams, we're going to have possibly a new Europa League entrant.
Mm-hmm.
Because you win the Coupe de la Ligue, automatic place in the Coupe, in the Europa League.
Yep, qualifying stage of the Europa League.
Maybe this is a way, and we've mentioned this previously, maybe it's not what Thierry Henry and co are focusing on, but maybe this is a way that Monaco can somehow get themselves into Europe the very long way around.
What happens if they're relegated, though? They play Ligue 2 and they get... This happened in England once, I recall, 4 or 5 years ago.
Was it Wigan?
Possibly Wigan. They played in the Europa League after winning the FA Cup.
Yeah, I think it may have been actually Wigan.
After they beat City in the FA Cup.
Yes,
It was Wigan. Championship they were playing and they were playing in the Europa League. It's tough, but that's what's ahead of them. My tip, though, is Bordeaux. I think Bordeaux will win this competition.
Oh, I think it's a bit early for me to say, but I'm still going to stick with the principalities.
Rick, it's the semi-finals. Yeah, it is the semi-finals. Getting pretty late.
No one would have picked 7th, 13th, 19th and 20th to make the final 4.
No, so now we're here. There are 4 left.
I'll just stick with Monaco just because I have been to Monaco and I like the city. So let's go with Monaco.
Okay. Bordeaux for me to win, but the draw to come. We'll bring you that very soon. I'd love to see Monaco draw Gangomp. Ooh. And one of those two sides make the final. That would be great. Bordeaux and Strasbourg in the other match. Copa del Rey action as well this morning, Rick. Take me through this. Girona 1, Atleti 1. Atleti have had issues winning games this season. They're still in the running for the title, of course, the La Liga crown. They're a few points behind Barcelona. But they have struggled, particularly on the road, to pick up points. We saw this in the Champions League as well. Again, I always come back to that hammering they had at the hands of Borussia Dortmund where they lost 4-0. But a lot of draws on the road this season. A 1-1 here against Girona, first leg. They get the away goal. They'll go through. I'm still confident they go through.
Yeah.
But again, another failure on the road. 1 win in their last 6 on the road. 5 draws in that time in all competitions. But more alarming than that, only 2 wins on the road since the middle of September, Rick. So we're talking 10 games. 2 wins in 10. One was a 3-2 at Valladolid in La Liga, in the competition, where Griezmann scored 10 minutes from time to win it. And the other was against San Andreu in the Copa del Rey 1-0 previous round first leg. So they've had no luck whatsoever on the road.
They haven't. What's even more concerning is they've had the lead and they haven't been able to actually, inverted commas, play out a professional result or park a bus or whatever term you ultimately want to get. You can't, and I keep saying this over and over, you need to consolidate these results. when you do have a lead, you need to ensure that you walk away with the 3 points or the lead going into a second leg of a two-legged tie. You can't be dropping points. You can't be dropping these sorts of results. And unfortunately, for Diego Simeone, that is exactly what has happened.
Levante to come in the league this weekend, just so important they get that win to not only maintain the pace with Barca, but obviously just to get back on the winners list, because their issues on the road continue. They've got a dominant record against Levante. We'll preview that in depth tomorrow. But against Girona, they've played them 3 times since Girona have made it into the top flight, and all three in all competitions have ended all square at the home of Girona. So, again, their issues on the road aren't a new thing, but they're going to have to get that together, because they are avoiding defeat, but they aren't banking enough points if they want to go all the way with Barcelona. But they are in the box seat to go through, despite the 1-1. Other games, Getafe 1, Valladolid 0, Villarreal 2, Espanyol 2, and Real Madrid 3, Leganes 0.
Don't know if you've seen the lineup for Real Madrid, but this was, I wouldn't say a second-string team, but there were many newer faces floating around here for Los Blancos, which is a good positive for them. There was a bit of a leaning mix towards the youth. You know, Sergio Reguilon, Vinicius Junior, we've seen a few times. Lucas Vasquez, I know he's a little bit older, but he hasn't had much time. Denis Ceballos as well. So it's good to see a lot of these players. Valverde as well. So it's good to see that Santiago Solari is at least looking to try and bring through this new generation and see what they're capable of in a lesser tier competition, but hopefully they can then flow on to the first team in La Liga.
Well, that would be, that would certainly be their intention. But a good win, 3-0. We did say that in this corresponding fixture last season, the two sides met at this stage of the Copa del Rey. Real actually won the first leg 0-1 away from home. They came to the Bernabeu and they lost 1-2. So a little bit of redemption there.
Just a little. But the other interesting thing, no Thibaut Courtois. He's out for a month with an injury, which means Keylor Navas, at the moment, is going to be doing some game time, and it'll be interesting to see what he will do over the next, say, what, 3 and a bit weeks that are left in this transfer window. Does he stay now because of the injury?
Well, that could be a disaster for his future.
Or does he go and sort of sacrifice everything he's
built? I don't think Real will let him go. If Courtois is injured for a month, that will trickle into February. They can't afford to not have one of those two available for the Ajax clash.
Correct.
Which we have our doubts over, Rick.
We have plenty of doubts over that as well, that's right.
All right, well, they're the results from the cup action in France, England and Spain. Of course, the league action gets underway again this weekend. Any action tomorrow morning to look forward to? Not much to come, but the league action is back underway this weekend. Of course, Asia Cup, just recapping those results as well.
Yeah, sure. Well, I was just going to say, there's a little bit of Copa del Rey going through.
The remainder of that round.
Japan 3-2 over Turkmenistan. Uzbekistan defeated Oman 2-1. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Qatar, Adrian's favourite national team other than the Italians and the Australians, beating Lebanon 2-0.
And Copa del Rey action tomorrow morning. Bilbao, Sevilla, Betis, Sociedad, Levante, Barcelona. We'll look at those games and more in the second hour. But again, I'm excited about the league action resuming this weekend. It's always an exciting time of year with the transfers, some new faces. Unique in that way to have some players switch competitions, switch clubs midway through the campaign. But obviously it all gets underway this weekend again. Vallecano Celta Vigo will be the opening La Liga clash. Caen, Lille and Lyon Reims will be the opening French Ligue 1 clashes. And the Premier League's back, of course, West Ham and Arsenal to open proceedings there. But we will focus, as we do now, on the transfer latest. And there are some stories that require some time here to dissect, analyse and go through. We'll start with Bayern Munich, because that's where the big news is and has come from overnight. €35 million, deal done. Benjamin Pavard will leave Stuttgart at season's end, make the move official to Bayern Munich 1st of July 2019. That's a huge get for a Munich side who we have discussed recently. Well, they do need now to turn a page, bring in some younger talent, invest wisely, move out some of the older talent, which we'll get to shortly. But I think this is a great start for Munich for the next chapter. And I think what this shows as well is that Kovac will be there to stay. They'll have patience, they'll have faith. Even if they don't win a piece of silverware this season, which I think could very well be the case, they will stick with Kovac. They'll bring in this new crop of talent, and Pavard is the first piece to that new puzzle.
Yeah, no, congratulations there to the Bavarians.
Huge get.
Great move. I know we've been touting this pretty much since, the end of the World Cup. Even during the World Cup, there were the murmurings going around. Will Pavard leave Stuttgart and join Bayern Munich? Will he do it by August 31?
Yep.
Will he do it in the winter? Will he do it in the summer? Well, the officialdom is now here. He'll join July 1, 2019. What I'm also interested to discuss about this is, what does that mean for Joshua Kimmich? Now, he is the current right back of Bayern Munich. Mm-hmm. The other one is Rafinha. But Rafinha is a little bit more clearer in what his future lies. He's going to be more or less joining Flamengo, you would think, over the next few weeks and months.
Yep.
So he'll be looking like he's out the door and returning to his native land. But what does it mean for the German international?
It means more time in midfield, I think.
That's exactly where I'm going. So all of a sudden, we have another piece of this Bayern Munich midfield puzzle answered. With Corentin Tolisso still injured, Joshua Kimmich now comes into central midfield, and you would assume would ultimately partner Tolisso. Now we need to know what's going to happen to the two wingers. Callum Hudson-Odoi is the one that constantly keeps getting mentioned, and you've got about 35,000 offers that have been made to Chelsea from Bayern Munich. You think ultimately that will have to go through at some stage. Chelsea aren't going to keep all these wingers.
Update on him to come.
What's going to happen on that right wing? That's the other interesting story. Cengiz Under is the one that constantly gets mentioned. Ante Rebic is one that I think ultimately might go from Frankfurt to Bayern Munich and join up with his former coach. But there's a little bit of watch this space about how this whole team starts to compose itself now that you've got the first piece falling into place.
And a good piece in that as well. Of course, really burst onto the scene at the World Cup, scored that stunning goal, which will live long in the minds and memories of everyone who was involved with that. But a great get, and another star from another club that Bayern Munich have added to their ranks. Some of the names here that I've got: Pavard joins the likes of Neuer, who joined from Schalke. Lewandowski, of course, from Dortmund, and every other Dortmund player who's made the switch. Hummels being one. Goretzka, Sula, Gnabry. Like, there are some really good players that Bayern Munich have...
They've poached.
Let's put
it that way. They've done what Barcelona did a few years ago, where they sort of started to poach all of Seville's players.
That's right.
What Southampton had done by then from Liverpool. So there's a few of these that have gone around over the years.
That's right. Bayern Munich doing a wonderful job, though, and it's a timely acquisition and the start of more to come. Cengiz Under is the other one. We mentioned that yesterday Monchi, the sporting director at Roma, has reportedly valued the young Turkish international a little higher than Arsenal, who are also interested, would have liked. Maybe because there is a deal, an agreement verbally with the Bavarians, who have expressed interest for some time as well. So they are, what I like about Munich at the moment is they are being linked to the right players to really build longer term.
Yep.
They're still a top club in Europe. They always will be a top club in Europe, but they're not a club in Europe for me, irrespective of whether they get past Liverpool or not, that are ready to dominate for years on end in the Champions League particularly. I think they're a rung or two behind PSG, Man City, Juve, Barca, the other reigning champions of their competitions. I think Munich do need to add a few new faces. Pavard, a great one. Again, €35 million. And the club are absolutely thrilled. The director, sporting director at Bayern Munich, Salihamidzic, has come out and spoken very highly of the individual, saying, "Pavard is a young player and a world champion. We're delighted and very, very proud to have been able to secure the services of a player like this." So you wouldn't expect us to say anything else, but I mean, to bring in a player that, again, there was a lot of interest in, and to have won the race for that. Well, we've questioned here previously, what's the lure to play at Bayern Munich at the present time? They dominate in Germany, normally, not this season.
Not yet, anyway.
But again, they're not running away with the title this season. So the competition's back, but what's the lure there? They're an ageing squad, they haven't had much success, they've had a few issues with a coach. Coaching-wise, they've been in and out of coaches in recent seasons. Is this a place for a young player to build his career and take it to the next level? Well, not previously, no, but previously not as promising as now an acquisition of Pavard. Maybe Cengiz Under, maybe Hudson-Odoi coming in as well. So it could really be a different look Munich outfit next season. I think it's very exciting for fans of that club. And, of course, if these young players do come in, before we get to the other ones, what it will mean is that, well, Robben, Ribery, that could be that. And they actually hinted that in terms of Ribery, the quote was probably will be his last. So for Robben and Ribery, well, Ribery, 409 games at the moment, 122 goals. Robben, 305 games, 143 goals. So you've got over 700 games of experience between the pair, 265 goals between the pair. That is a lot of experience to be losing irrespective of whether or not they're in the twilight and their days are numbered.
Could that hurt them at some stage, maybe next season, year after? Maybe you get to like a round of 16 quarter final and you need someone off the bench to give you 20 minutes. Maybe if you know a pressure cooker situation, maybe to get a goal or to defend a few times.
The difficulty, I think, is it's both of them at the same time. And to lose that in the dressing room, the experience and everything they bring there, yes.
Or is it better that they do it now and it's like a ripped Band-Aid? Once it's off, it's off, it's gone, you can start to move on.
Well, I think that will be the outcome. Whether it's better or worse, we can't say. You'll never know, will you? But I just think it's going to be a blow in some capacity that they lose both Ribéry and Rob Benn, arguably their two best players in the last decade. In fact, they have to be there. They've been there for the entire decade, and they've been both very important in key moments of this club's rich history. So it's a massive, massive loss to lose them. I'm sure they'll remain involved with the club in some capacity post-playing days. I think they'll both continue. Ribéry, I'm not so sure.
Ribéry's probably going to go to a developing market. Maybe the A-League.
Yeah.
I've speculated about this before and what my thoughts are on it all.
But I highly doubt that he'll play at another club in a top European competition.
No, I don't think. I think he's
actually... Rob Benn's been linked to Inter Milan, a return to the Eredivisie.
To PSV a few times. So I think Rob Benn's got more of a chance of going to another European club than I think with Frank Ribéry.
Well, the end of an era at Bayern Munich, but they have made the first move, and that's Benjamin Pavard joining on €35 million deal, which is enormous. Hudson-Odoi, the other one that you mentioned from Chelsea. So the latest here, this is according to ESPN, that a source close to them have confirmed that the player will not sign a new deal with Chelsea. That can only mean one thing, €35 million as well to Munich.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Simple as that.
Can only mean that.
Yep. Now, whether it be before the January window closes or whether it be in the summer, he's not going to hang around because he knows he's not going to get any game time now that Christian Pulisic will be joining on July 1.
Well, yeah, a big money move like that doesn't give you much hope.
Correct. And at the same time, Chelsea need to recoup some of the spend that they obviously did for the US international. So they obviously need to sell a piece, and it might not recoup the entire amount, but it's going to recoup a fair chunk of it, two-thirds, more or less.
Yep.
They need to accept this offer. They really do.
January or June for you?
Probably June would be better for him. I think he...
And Chelsea.
I mean, they do have this Europa League run that will affect the squad depth, playing every 3 days, depending on what they do also in the FA Cup and how they're going, of course, in the English Premier League, the League Cup as well. So Chelsea competing on four fronts. You need to try as many as many players as possible. So maybe it is a June move for me rather than a January one.
I think certainly. Chelsea, a few issues at Chelsea at the moment. We'll go there now because they're strongly linked with Bayern Munich recently.
I was just going to, just before we move on to Chelsea, with the Hudson-Odoi thing, if he goes to Bayern Munich in January, you've still got Frank Ribéry that is playing quality football. Kingsley Coman's come back from that ankle/syndesmosis injury, so he needs game time as well. I don't think Hudson-Odoi would want to probably go from one club sitting on a bench to another being third string at this stage.
No, I don't think so. I think that once the Ribéry-Robben
move is done, then you will see him, yes.
Yeah, it makes more sense. So the link with Chelsea is an interesting one now because the reason I'm with you, I think June certainly, they can't afford to lose players. We've brought you the news, the unfortunate news, I suppose, that Fabregas, despite having said goodbye to Chelsea, the players, the fans and all involved, Fabregas may not be on the move anywhere. So Monaco, unfortunately, may miss out because Maurizio Sarri has put the move on hold because he wants a replacement. And I'm not sure where this is now. There are some alarming reports that have emerged out of Chelsea, which I'll bring you in a moment. What have you picked up here?
Well, I don't know if you've seen this, but Cesc Fabregas has actually posted something on Instagram. Now, I'm not one to follow a lot of social media and all that sort of stuff.
But you can read into it.
I can read a little bit into this because one of those things that Instagram does offer is ask me a question, I'll give you an answer. One of his followers has actually asked, are you excited about moving to Monaco? His answer, it's exciting. Can't wait, champagne glasses. What does that tell you? He's going to Monaco.
I'm reading a little more into those emojis below.
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. It's not done yet. Maurizio Sarri is unwilling to let the player leave unless he gets a replacement. Fabregas has been an important player for him recently. He needs a replacement. He can't afford to have this squad, who are still in the running for four pieces of silverware, he can't afford to have this squad any thinner than it currently is. He's put a block on that. The latest reports, though, in contrast to that, the director, or one of the directors of the club, Marina Granovskaya.
So the boss.
The boss.
The boss. The two
she has said this. Mauricio Sarri, this is according to reports, Mauricio Sarri has demanded the club go for Higuain, as we brought you yesterday.
Correct.
She has put a hold on that. Reports are saying there is tension between Sarri and the club as a result of these two blocks. One by the club on Higuain, one by the manager on Cesc Fabregas.
This is not a good sign 4 months
into. So what should have been a positive period has now turned sour, according to these reports, because there is tension that previously wasn't there. This will not be good for Chelsea unless this is resolved immediately.
Is this another Antonio Conte versus Roman Abramovich type scenario occurring?
It sounds like it. It sounds not like it. This is not good at all for Chelsea, and it's obviously, their failure to have attracted another name to replace Fabregas has led them to this point. Sarri, though, believes that if they bring in Higuain, his side will be stronger for it, which I agree. But now the club have put a block on it because, well, he put a block on Fab. So let's put a block on Higuain.
Bit of, you know, who's got the bigger, you know, what going around these days at the moment. It's very, very interesting
in the next
few weeks.
That's not going to
not
work
good.
Well.
Not good at all.
Not at
Absolutely
all.
Absolutely not.
But Fabregas to Monaco is still, they're still saying it will happen. Instagram's telling us it will.
He's telling us it will. It's not you or I. It's what the player himself has posted out into the public sphere.
I'm not sure that's a done deal just yet. But he will join, if he does join Monaco, he'll join Naldo, who's just joined the club. And also Vaniquet, who, of course, a former player of, I saw him quite closely at Roma. He was there at Roma for two seasons, spent one of those seasons on loan at Marseille. He has joined Monaco on loan from Antalyaspor in the Turkish Super League. So they've made another signing in midfield. So all of a sudden, this very young, raw side that were Monaco, all of a sudden, you add Vaniquet, Fabregas, Naldo, you're quite an experienced outfit. And all of a sudden, the likes of Golovin, Falcao, and the others who have been there for some time, the very experienced defensive unit and goalkeeping ranks, they're looking a lot more of a established, experienced, aging, but likely to stay up in Ligue 1 outfit.
And you throw in Ronnie Lopez, whose injury has wiped out the first half of the season for him. He's like a new recruit, you could say, though he obviously has been around the club for a number of seasons.
Their injury list is absurd.
It's still absurd, but you throw him in, you throw in Camille Glick, Benjamin Heinrichs is also back as well from injury. So they start to get a few more pieces, and it starts to help out that core of the team just to really, really help them to stay up. Jovetic, another one. There's a good crop of players. Unfortunately, they've all been injured.
They're a good squad. They are a good squad. We know they're a good squad, but they just haven't been able to get it together. And there are some really talented young players in this squad as well, but when they've been fielding 11 players under the age of 18, it's
a bit hard.
Well, it's very difficult at any level. But just the last one on Chelsea, how do you think it ends up? Do you think Fabregas eventually makes the move? Do you think they get the replacement? Barella and Paredes have been the two players linked. Do you think Higuain comes? Where are they at?
If I'm going to go early, I'm going to say Fabregas does move to Monaco. Mm-hmm. I think that one there is written in the stars and it will happen this January. I still think that Higuain will ultimately move across to Chelsea.
But at the end of the season,
I can't see Milan selling him now, and I can't see this whole three-way with Juventus having to be thrown into the mix occurring in order to get the Argentine across to England. It's going to take a lot of work and a lot of effort.
But they can't lose Fabregas and not replace him.
Who they get, I won't know, but it looks like it at this stage that Fabregas is out the door with no replacement in sight at this stage.
All right, well, Fabregas to Monaco, that is the likely outcome for sure. While we are in France, last one there, Dalian Yifeng, the Chinese Super League outfit, they've been sniffing around the French Ligue 1. The latest name linked to that club. Now, keep in mind, yesterday we brought in the news that Yannick Carrasco, who currently plays at Dalian Yifeng, is linked to a few clubs in Europe. Mm-hmm. If he's out, can they replace him? Dimitri Payet is the player that they're identifying as a potential target. Reports saying that if he makes the move, on offer financially, would be triple his current salary. Triple his salary. I'm not sure exactly where he's on at the moment, but I'd imagine as one of the higher paid players in Ligue 1 outside of PSG, he'd probably be on 5-6.
Yeah,
so we're looking at a 15 to 20 million euro salary.
anywhere between 12 and 20. I think he's on about 4. But nonetheless,
that will be very difficult for him to say no to.
Well, he is obviously playing at Marseille. Unfortunately, Marseille...
going through a difficult period.
Going through a difficult period. We'll discuss why with Rudy Garcia a little bit later on. You'd be silly to not actually not consider this very, very closely. He and his agent probably need to have a good think about it, see where they're at with Marseille, see where they're at with the club, and see where his future may lie. It might be across, you know, a couple of continents away.
31 years of age, 32 in March.
This will probably be his last big, mega money offer.
You're never going to get an offer like this. This is, he'll take this. If the opportunity is there, he'll take it. If the reports are true, he'll take that. Marseille, not really doing much. Obviously,
no man's land at the moment, really.
No man's land at all. He's had he had that stunning season at West Ham, but he's been very inconsistent since, a few injury issues, a few form issues.
Well, he had that run in the Europa League last season where he couldn't stop scoring.
He's a great player.
Fantastic.
He's a stunning
great
player.
Great dribbler.
But unfortunately, this season hasn't been the season for him. But if this opportunity presents itself late on in your career, be hard to say no to. Of course, part of that Marseille side that capitulated towards the end of the campaign. But a great player, triple his salary on offer there in China. Dalian Yifeng looking to splash cash. If he does make the move, though, Carrasco definitely leaves.
Yep.
And we said yesterday, Milan were linked. Arsenal were also linked.
Strong favourites at this stage, Arsenal.
I think it'd be an interesting arrival at Arsenal, Carrasco. Potentially now, January, if this move goes through.
Can't wait to see what he can do and where he ultimately is positioned in the team. We know that they're going to have a little bit extra free cash with one Welshman that we'll probably go to fairly shortly.
We will.
Who is out the door, will more or less on a 5-year deal with my boys, putting my hat on there, Juventus. And that is, of course, Aaron Ramsey. So he does get that room in central midfield / as a winger in order to operate.
Well, reports are saying that the Ramsey deal is done. The reports have been there for some time for Ramsey to Juventus. So Juve set to win the race. A lot of clubs have been interested in Ramsey for some time. Again, I'll repeat what I've said every day this week. I still don't understand why so much money for a player who's in his late 20s, who's been injury prone, and a 5-year deal going to be worth up to about £36 million. That's a lot of money. It is a lot of money for a player who hasn't played regularly season in, season out.
Is he proven? Because I still can't answer that question.
I can't.
I'm going to say more than likely he's not proven because of his injuries.
Mm.
He's a great central midfielder. I'm not going to deny that. But unfortunately, I don't think he's what Juventus ultimately need in a central midfielder. And I still argue, how much is it going to cost them at the back end? Who's going to have to leave in order to compensate for him coming to the club? Is it Sami Khedira? Likely, but he is a teacher's pet favourite of Max Allegri.
Max Allegri may not be there next season.
He may not be there, but that's another story within itself. Is it Emre Can, who's just joined? Well, unlikely. Is it Rodrigo Bentancur? I'm hoping not, because I think there is the future of that midfield. Is it Milan Pjanic, who's just signed a brand new 4-year deal worth about $6 million himself? Is it Blaž Matuidi?
Or is it no one?
Or is it no one?
And do they just add a sixth midfielder and just pay a little bit extra for a salary and maybe move a player on in another position? I'm not sure. But the way it stands this season is that Juve perhaps sold themselves a little short by offloading club veteran Claudio Marchisio to Zenit St. Petersburg on a free. They've been one player short in midfield all season. Pogba has been linked to a return for that exact reason. But Pogba would come at a fee. Ramsey comes
nothing
for free. So all you have to pay is his salary. I think they can find a way to make this work, but again, why Ramsey? Why Ramsey when there are so many other top players out there? But the free element is obviously an appealing element to Juve, who have done very well with free acquisitions over the last decade.
Yep.
They really have. So Ramsey to Juve, 5-year deal, worth £36 million, but they'll sign him for free. A big move. Not a move I'm overly confident with, but the player at his best has certainly proven that he's capable. But I'm with you. I don't think he's an unproven player. I don't think he's a proven player because that consistency hasn't been there at that level. But he'll leave Arsenal at season's end, that's for sure. And Juventus are set to win the race. While in England, Arsenal, their crosstown rivals Tottenham, we discussed one of their star men yesterday in Christian Eriksen, who is linked with a move to Real Madrid, has been and will continue to be until someone says otherwise. big money around for Eriksen, of course, a superstar player in his own right. Tottenham chairman Daniel Levy, though, has, according to reports, placed a small fee on the head of Eriksen.
How small?
Starts with a two.
Ooh.
And it's pounds. And it's £225 million.
He wants the world record signing.
Well, he wants the world record signing for his, well, one of his star players. Wishful thinking. I don't think anyone will pay £225 million for Eriksen. But again, well, who knows? Who knows?
No one saw Neymar coming at that ridiculous price. But
and Eriksen isn't Neymar, but Eriksen's still very, very talented. Are Real Madrid desperate enough to
splash the cash?
Buy into that and splash the cash? I would not think so. I'd be very surprised if so. But that's the reported wishful thinking fee that he's placed on the Dane's head.
Or is this the way that you actually
scare
once and truly scare Real Madrid off? Or scare anybody from paying that ludicrous amount of money? Is that what has just happened?
I don't know. I don't know what they're
because I
are.
Really
if they were to get that money, I tell you what, they'll be selling.
Oh, they'd be selling. If you get that offer that comes to you, you go, here you go, enjoy, thank you for your services, goodbye, good luck in your new town and your new club and your new country. I really can't see that happening. I think this was the scare tactic of all scare tactics. We all thought Neymar was nigh on impossible from occurring at that price. You know, it was 150% jump from what Paul Pogba was in terms of a transfer fee. I think this might be another version of that, the scaring off version.
I still think he'd be a suitable signing for Real Madrid, but not at that price.
Not at that price.
That'd be a silly move, particularly if you look at Real Madrid's rivals, Barcelona. We'll discuss this one in a lot more depth in the second hour, but according to reports in Spain, Barcelona are set to announce. Now, I get the feeling this could be similar to what Bayern Munich have just done with Pavard, but they're set to announce the signing of the hottest young property in midfield in world football in Frankie de Jong. $86 million this one valued at. So clearly not the £225 million. You're getting arguably a more talented player with certainly more room to grow. He could be a decade-long player at that club for a lot less. That's certainly a wiser investment for a player who, yes, also unproven.
Yes.
Proven in his quality to a level, but clearly unproven for a Barcelona
at the
highest level.
Correct.
However, that's a fair investment in comparison for me.
It is a very, very, very smart investment. I don't know. Maybe I'm still trying to come to grips with it, but $86 million is a lot.
You think it's too much?
A lot of money for Frankie Deere.
€75 million.
Yeah, I still think it's a lot of money.
It is a lot of money, but there are big raps on this player.
Yeah, there's a lot of money, though.
It is.
I just
That's a top 10 transfer fee in history.
That's somewhere around there, if not maybe in there. Yeah,
it's all about there.
I know I keep saying it, but it's a lot of money for 21. I'm sure the promise is there, like you've explained a moment ago. But
it is a lot of money. I would prefer to see him go for a 40 to 50, not an 80 or a 75.
Because you've got to imagine, Coutinho is still there and can play central midfield. Artur is there. He can play central midfield. You've still got Sergio Busquets. You've still got Rakitic and Vidal as well. And I'm sure there's one or two in the ranks of La Masia that can come into this team over the next couple of seasons.
Surely then they would move. Vidal just hasn't settled in enough into life at Barcelona. But you're right. That's still, there's an abundance of talent there in the middle of the park.
I just wonder, $86 million, €75 million.
Whereas for Eriksen and Real need Eriksen. And they need to start that change. But not at that price.
Not at that price. That's why I think maybe both moving to Spain. I can see one of the two, but I can't see both.
Understood.
Especially for those sorts of figures.
Now, speaking of big money, 225 is big money.
Huge.
That's really big money. But €160 million, Rick, does that ring a bell at all?
Oh, it does ring a bell. Rings a very loud bell.
Well, €160 million was a price tag on Milinkovic-Savic from Lazio last summer. And Claudio Lotito said, he said no deal. And he also said now, he said, well, not too many other presidents, owners would make that bold decision. You've got that right. Because now this player is, well, he's still highly valued, highly rated, but he hasn't had the same season.
No.
And it begs the question always, well, when do you cash in on these players? You know, in the case of De Jong, if €75 million is an offer for him, and you're his club, you sell.
You take it. Yes.
You take that deal.
Especially a team that does regenerate and rebuild and find these next hot prospects.
Better than most.
Better than most, as we know in Ajax.
Absolutely. But in the case here with Delazio, it was very interesting when I read this report saying that, well, this is what he valued him at, there was interest at that price, and I said no. Where is a club like Lazio going by saying no to a 150 plus euro offer?
You just have to wonder, though, how many promises were made to the Serbian international to keep him?
That's how true. Many but again, why as a club would you make those promises?
Well, I think with Lazio, you were on the brink. You were 10 minutes away from making a Champions League.
That's true.
Could you imagine, hypothetically speaking here, Lazio in the Champions League, whether they go through or not, you expose the Serbian to six matches at the highest level.
Yep.
You expose the rest of your team to six matches at the highest level, and you can also lure in a higher quality individual to your team.
That's true.
Could you imagine? Yeah, you know, it was a little bit of a gamble by Claudio Lotito, the president, saying, you know what, we're going to risk it a little bit to try and get a bit more of the biscuit in 12 months' time.
Yep.
You keep him, you keep the core of this team, as has seemingly happened. Unfortunately, De Vrij is the big one that has sort of gone out the door. They could be there. They can still get into a Champions League spot. And then maybe what Claudio Lotito is banking on is maybe not even that 160. Maybe that's the starting price.
Mm-hmm.
It might be that it has a little bit of a two in front of Sergei Milinkovic-Savic's transfer fee.
Yeah, well,
that's the only thing I can think of.
Well, again, that's the risk that you have to take. But as a club like Lazio, surely if what he's suggested that, well, there was a 160 million euro offer on the table, that would have been so hard to refuse, but obviously not in his case.
Well, interesting, when you compare that to Filippo Anderson, he had 42 million, so 50 million euros, I think it was, 42 million pounds put on the table, and he accepted that.
Yep.
This one here is a far bigger fish. Could you have imagined what Lazio could have done with the best part of 200 million euros in their war chest?
Oh, they could have done a lot of things. The club may not have even needed to replicate or replace a player of that calibre. They could have done so many things off the field with that.
That's
new
right.
Stadiums, lots of plans in place. It could have been a game changer for them. That's a bold, bold move. And to think that even if they did keep him, they made the Champions League. They're not realistically winning the Champions League.
No.
They weren't going to replicate what Roma did. So with that, by saying no to that sum of money, what was the long-term goal for Lotito and Lazio? Oh, I'm not sure.
Hindsight is a wonderful thing, as they say.
It is, it is. But I don't think there are too many individuals who would have said no to that. No. As he correctly said, Lotito said, no, not many others would have done what I did. So whether he's saying he's made the wrong call, whether he's saying he made a bold call, I'm not so sure. But that's the unfortunate reality for Milinkovic-Savic and Lazio, who are still, well, they've got a fight in their hands to actually finish in the top four this season and get that return to the Champions League. Matt's come through. Good afternoon to you, Matt. Hey, boys, any news for Atalanta? This is for my brother. The only news we've come across recently regarding Atalanta, no news of any significance.
No.
I think they're stable with their squad. A couple of changes, though, as midfielder Luca Valzania has made the move on loan to Frosinone. And I read a report with Swansea have stepped up their chase for Timothy Castagna, £10 million that they're looking to offload the Atalanta players. So not many coming in. The interesting thing with Atalanta this season is that they lost the core of their defence. They've lost talented players in other areas of the park, yet they've still managed to be consistent. And actually, after the first few rounds, they've been second to Juve in terms of points gained. And there have been periods this season where their form has been such that they've been the most informed team in the competition. They're the best attack in the competition in terms of goals scored. I don't think they need to change too much, at least now in January.
No, not too much. But the only other news that I can bring about the Nerazzurri is that Papu Gomez,
what is the update?
Independiente in Argentina are hot on his heels and are willing to pay for him.
Inevitable he'll go back to Argentina, I believe, but not just yet. Not just yet. Atalanta on the verge of another European campaign. It'd be great to see them really establish themselves in that competition. Again, they asserted themselves very well a couple of seasons ago in the latter stages. Took it right up to Dortmund, if you recall. Very unfortunate not to beat Dortmund. But I think that Papu Gomez and the other stars there should just hold on, because they have a good season or two still left in them. And if they can then finish in European football again, bring back some key players, bring in some key players. It could be an exciting short-term future.
Well, it could be. I'm not going to say no to it, but watch out for him.
Watch out for him. But no news of note, Matt. No news of any major significance there. Mm. 5 minutes to go in this first hour. Do stay tuned in the second hour. We'll recap all the results from this morning and start to look ahead to what's to come this weekend as well. It's a big, big weekend of action with league action getting back underway. But just some of the other transfer stories, which we'll touch on and then discuss in more depth in the second hour. Just a thought on each, Rick, as we near the end, in no particular order. But this is a big one, Inter Milan. They were the team who actually pipped Lazio to the post for that fourth spot in Champions League football last season. But Mauro Icardi, their captain. Now, this is a big news story. An Argentinian source, a very reputable Argentinian source, TYC Sports it's called, they have confirmed that Wanda Nara, who is the wife/agent of Mauro Icardi, has fallen out with Inter. Mauro Icardi, I read a report this morning, has been fined €115,000 for being late to training amid these exit rumours. So there are a few internal issues there. And the rumours of he moving to Real and now Chelsea, they continue. They continue to persist. We also read the report earlier this week from Marotta, the former director at Juve, that stated that he actually wanted the cheaper and younger Mauro Icardi to join Juve, not Ronaldo, hence why Marotta ended up leaving and joined Inter. So all these reports that have emerged now lead me to believe only one thing, and that's Icardi is finally nearing the exit door.
Bye-bye. What Wanda also added is that she has four offers from four clubs around Europe. Two out of Spain.
Yep.
We know which ones
they
are.
We know which two they are.
One out of England.
We know which one that is.
And one out of France.
Well, it can only be one. So there you go. So PSG, Chelsea, Barca, Real Madrid. And it just feels that everything that's happening is aligning with previous reports. It's for Inter, if they lose Icardi.
Bye-bye, Inter. I will say this. Game over, Red Rover.
Well, Inter have struggled to score. They've struggled to score for years. And Icardi has been that man that has done the damage. This is all of a sudden turning very messy.
So the question now becomes, and we'll relate this back to Chelsea. Mm. If you are Marina, if you are Maurizio Sarri, who do you want if they're coming at the same price?
Higuain for me.
Higuain or Icardi? You want Higuain?
Higuain for me. I know he's older, but Higuain, I think he fits the system better and will complement those wingers. Icardi's
been playing with wingers all these
Icardi
years.
Icardi is a star. What I don't like about Icardi, though, which I don't think will suit the English game as much, is that he is... Oh, there have been some poachers play very well in England, but he is a poacher. He will have 10 touches of a ball for the entirety of the 90 minutes, and that may be that. I just think Higuain is better suited... I just think he's better suited to those around him.
He understands the Sarri system.
He understands the Sarri system as well.
Less settling in.
Icardi can be very frustrating. I wouldn't mind seeing Icardi in Spain. I think he'd be best suited there.
Well, he'd return to Barcelona is what it would, if that were...
I could see him going to Real.
He'd be very nice at Real too. But
he could be the Benzema replacement.
He could be. Like I said, there's a few little pieces that need to all fall into place, but it's interesting to see they're both...
It feels that this summer could be the summer of...
The transfers.
The striker transfer.
Yeah.
We've had a few goalkeepers move around recently. We've had some defensive switches. I think this could be the striker switch where the likes of Benzema, Higuain, Icardi, these really top, Dybala, Mbappe, as we've said, this could be that what to come ahead there. But Icardi, more on him to come in the second hour. We'll explore that. Across town, Cutrone, the agent of Cutrone at Milan, has said that Spanish and German clubs are interested in his client. Any idea which?
He's got a hat. Because there could be that many of them.
I think I read Sevilla.
But Sevilla seem to be linked with a whole heap of strikers all of a sudden. Since the exit of Luis Muriel, we've talked about, obviously, Alvaro Morata. We've talked about Andre Silva possibly going and not going and staying and what have you. We've talked about a few others. I just feel Sevilla at the moment are the striker club that everyone gets linked to. Just like we've said with United, and that's how you sort of inflate your price in
with
the past.
Any player.
Mm.
Well, Cutrone's agent has confirmed that Man City... Guardiola, he spoke about the departure of Brahim Diaz, who of course left for Real Madrid on that 6-year deal. He said that we tried everything we could to keep hold of the youngster, but he's very happy as well that he's moved to Real Madrid, thinks it's the perfect step for the player's development.
Ultimately, if a player wants to go and there's an agreement between clubs, You're not going to stop it. That's as simple as that.
The very last one. Talented Moroccan defender Mehdi Benatia from Juve is still linked with an exit. The Juve directors, Paratici and co, met with the agent of Benatia, though. And despite interest from Arsenal, Dortmund and Schalke, they've told Benatia's agent, no sale, you are staying.
That only leads one thing to me. Well, he's going to get game time from June 1, 2019.
He's going to have to because he's not getting any younger. He's in his 30s and he's going to have to get game time because he's one of the world's best defenders, not playing a minute.
Simple as that.
All right, that is it for this first hour. Stay tuned to the app and website, footballnationradio.com, for the second hour. Some more coaching news to come as well. I've got a nice update on Gattuso for you, who celebrated his birthday yesterday. A big happy birthday to him. But a lot more to come. We'll recap the results and all those big transfer stories, particularly that Icardi one, in a great deal of depth. But do stay tuned to our Apple website. As I said, Rick and I will be back with plenty more very shortly right here on Afternoons on FNR Football Nation Radio.
You're listening to Afternoons on FNR Football Nation Radio with Adriano De Monte and Rick D'Andrea.
Hello there and welcome to the second hour of Afternoons here on FNR Football Nation Radio. Transfer time. It's always a busy time to talk transfers. If you'd like to talk transfers with us in this second hour live, the lines are open, 99444999. You can call us on at FNR underscore radio on Twitter. We've got some of the biggest players in the game in the mix for a move somewhere. Where, when, how it will happen.
Why,
who knows, but we just bring you the reports. Mauro Icardi is certainly a big one. We'll open with that very shortly. But Mauro Icardi, the captain of Inter, very big developments there. We've got some young guns potentially on the move. Hudson-Odoi, Cutrone of AC Milan and more. And, of course, that Bayern Munich revolution, I suppose. The start of the new Bayern Munich era. Robben Ribery both set to depart at the end of the season. It's likely, not confirmed, but very likely, and some youngsters already starting to come in. A big one in particular, having made the move from Stuttgart. It will come into play at the end of the season. Also some results from overnight. And we'll start to look ahead, Rick, to what's to come this weekend as well. Tomorrow, our favourite show of the week, of Friday, in the lead-up to all the league action. But let's recap the results from overnight. A few of the big transfer moves that have taken place as well, and then we'll get back into all the latest transfer news.
Thank you, and we'll commence with what has happened in England. And Manchester City have all but confirmed their spot in the Carabao Cup final with a ruthless 9-0. Yes, 9-0 win over Burton Albion. The scoreline is the highest ever victory coach Pep Guardiola has ever encountered under his management. Gabriel Jesus grabbed four, while De Bruyne, Foden, Zinchenko, Walker and Mahrez all found the back of the net as well. Guingamp have defeated Paris Saint-Germain 2-1 in the Coupe de la Ligue. Yes, let me repeat that one more time. Guingamp have defeated PSG 2-1 in the Coupe de la Ligue. Two converted second-half penalties saw the team that is currently in bottom place in Ligue 1 topple the reigning champions. PSG's run of 45 unbeaten cup games is also over. Other results from the competition saw Monaco advance 8-7 on penalties, past Rennes, and Bordeaux beat Le Havre 1-0. Real Madrid has beaten Leganes 3-0 in the Copa del Rey, while Getafe were the only other winners from this morning's actions as they beat Valladolid 1-0. Girona and Atletico Madrid played at a 1-1 draw, while Villarreal and Espanyol had a 2-2 stalemate. In Asian Cup results, Japan has been made to work hard for its 3-2 win over Turkmenistan, while Uzbekistan defeated Oman 2-1. Qatar, who was a feature of our short video clip yesterday, has claimed a 2-0 win over Lebanon. And finally, the transfer speculation surrounding the future of Stuttgart defender Benjamin Pavard is finally over, with the French World Cup winner agreeing to a €35 million move to Bayern Munich in the summer on a 5-year deal. Adrian, that is all the news here on a Thursday. Back to you.
Lovely. City 9, Burton 0. Just take me through that quickly. Again, you said the point that
Guardiola's teams have never won by that scoreline. That's the biggest result in his managerial career. Again, this is more than just a win against the minnow. Because Barcelona, Bayern Munich, now Man City, they've played some minnows in Guardiola's time. This, for me, it was a statement. It was a week of statements. They took care of Liverpool. They had another win in the Premier League since their last defeat. But then the two big cup wins, they could have easily rolled through 2-3-0. They didn't need to put 16 past Rotherham and Burton, and they've done exactly that. So that's what I read into it. I read into it that Guardiola's fired up, City are fired up, they want to bounce back, they want to respond well, and they want to let Liverpool know that even though we were expected to win this comfortably anyway, we're coming for you. And many out there, and I'll get your thoughts on this as well, many out there are saying that obviously after the win, City are back in the title race well and truly, but many are saying out there that they strongly favour City to just go on and overturn Liverpool's four-point lead.
The problem is who have they actually played since Liverpool?
Oh, they played no one.
That's right.
They played no one.
And they've taken care of
no one.
Basically no one.
No one.
So we can't read that much into it. Sure. So they've only played Liverpool in 2019 from the English Premier League, and they won 2-1. They probably could have won a few more, but you've also got to imagine there was that 1.5 centimetre moment of difference, which could have been a 2-2 draw as well. So I'm not going to get too excited, but if you bring it back to Pep Guardiola and what he was able to do at, say, Barcelona, what he did at Bayern Munich, Barcelona did have plenty of 7 and 8 nil wins as well. You've got to remember this. Sure, 9 is another level. We're not going to deny this. But I ultimately still feel that Barcelona team from about 2007 to 2010 was absolutely incredible. And that is what Pep Guardiola was in charge of. He needs to create that same sort of history with Manchester City. And when he does that, when he wins these couple of Champions Leagues, that's when I'll start to compare the two right down to the middle, right down to the very last degree. Yeah, it's nice. He's won 9-0, but it's a one-off. That's where I still see it.
Wolves this weekend in the Premier League.
I am not writing off.
Another one.
Say this again. I am not writing off Wolves getting a result here.
Oh.
Possibly even all 3 points.
Rick.
Did you remember what happened in the first match?
1-1. One.
And we know what's happened previously with Wolves and who they've gotten the results against. I won't write it off. I will not write this off completely.
City lost recently at home. They never lose at home. They lost at home to Palace. And then they bounced back with that 2-1 over Liverpool at home. I was thinking the opposite. And that's where I thought you were going. I think City could put a lot past Wolves. 4-5 more.
Could be a how many?
Well, you don't agree with it.
I don't agree with it, no. No, and I've given my reasons. I gave it when obviously Liverpool played Wolves, obviously a few weeks ago. What happened only one night ago? What did Wolves do to Liverpool?
Yes, they defeated them 2-1.
Second string and all.
You really think Wolves will take care of City and Liverpool?
It'll be a fairly similar Wolves lineup that will go out there against Man City. I know we're sort of deviating a little
That's
bit.
That's all right.
But I think, I am not ruling out Nuno Espirito Santo taking care of Pep Guardiola's men. I really am not.
No.
I can see a draw. I can also see a Wolves win. I can also see a Man City win. So I'm obviously covering all my bases here.
Right, so we can see all three results.
Absolutely. You know, this is how it works in this game. But I can actually see Wolves turning up, getting a result against one of the big boys, and then following it up, say, next week, and dropping all 3 points. That's how they operate. And I really can see Wolves getting 3 points.
One win in their last 4 league games, and that was away to Tottenham.
There you go.
You're onto something here, Rick. We'll see.
I know we've done this before. Have a look and pull up the results. Maybe we'll get the producer out the back to actually do some work. We'll ask the producer, get the results of the Wolves against the Big Six.
Okay.
And we'll bring you them in the next ad break.
The producer's thrilled about that, Rick.
He's looking over my shoulder. He's going, you are going to cop it.
More on that to come. As for the League Cup, though, who wins? City will take on Chelsea or Tottenham in the final, unless Burton can win 10-0 in the next leg. But who
you're
wins?
Giving them absolutely no chance, as am I here.
In all honesty.
Now, okay, Man City v Tottenham and or Chelsea. Well,
who does City want? The better question.
I'd say they probably still would want Chelsea. I still think that they match up quite well, and on any given day, it's a flip of a coin with that one.
Chelsea did beat them though recently.
They did, but with Tottenham, I think they also. It's a little bit of an edge to Mauricio Pochettino ahead of Pep Guardiola. So that's why I still think if you are a Manchester City fan, you'd probably want Chelsea rather than the actual Spurs.
Okay. Well,
who would you want?
I think they want Tottenham.
You think the opposite?
Just because they recently lost to Chelsea. I think they want Tottenham. They've had the wood over Tottenham. over Guardiola's tenure, and I think that they'd just be satisfied to go in. I think they're just happy that Liverpool aren't there, to be honest.
Mm. That's also a nice little thing for them.
But again, having said that, 4 points behind Liverpool in the league, we'll discuss this more tomorrow when we start to preview the Premier League. 4 points behind Liverpool, many out there saying that City will just go on and beat Liverpool to the line. Liverpool will need to drop points, which they've only done in four games this season, but you still have to fancy Liverpool to go on and win the title, but again, many out there thinking City will go on and do it.
I do fancy Liverpool to win the title.
You've said that all season.
And I'm going to stick with it. I'm not going to change my tune all of a sudden
all right,
after a couple of matches.
Silly question to ask you that then. Let's go to the Copa del Rey this morning. Real 3-0. How important a result for them? Some young faces in the side, some different players in the side, but all important result. And that piece of domestic silverware still aren't really alive with the second leg to come.
It's the confidence booster that you need. And that's what I think it is at the moment for Real Madrid. They needed to get the result, get away, get the 3 points. Or I know 3 points, but at least go into the second leg.
Get the positive result.
Get the positive result and move on and try and at least close this tie off as quickly as possible. 3-0, you would think you can't really see Leganes coming back and getting four and keeping Real Madrid at bay.
Well, keep in mind, Real have lost two very big games.
Yeah.
3-0 this season.
Yep, very true. Very true.
So, we'll see. Getafe Valladolid 1-0. Villarreal Espanyol 2-2. Maybe Espanyol starting to put together some winning form.
Maybe they're starting to find the back of the net, more importantly for them.
That is true. They actually led 2-0 in this one on the road at Villarreal. Villarreal are having a woeful campaign.
Led 1-0 at halftime as well.
1-0 halftime, 2-0 late on, and then 2-2, two goals in the last 5 minutes for the host. Villarreal keep themselves alive, but with two away goals, Espanyol in the box seat. And Girona 1, Atletico Madrid 1. I said the stat, Atleti, which is two wins in the last 10 on the road, a 3-2 at Valladolid and a 1-0 at San Andreu in the Copa del Rey previous round first leg. They're not playing well away from the Wanda Metropolitano.
Not at all. And that's a little bit of a concern if you do want to sort of be in contention, in particular in Atletico Madrid's case, to try and win all three titles.
That is exactly right. Now, three games tomorrow morning. Bilbao, Sevilla, Betis, Sociedad, Levante, Barcelona. Bilbao, Sevilla is interesting. Sevilla flying high in La Liga. And Bilbao, well, they got their third win of the season against Celta Vigo a few days ago. They're really struggling. But again, they come in with an opportunity to keep themselves alive in a cup competition. But hard to see anything but a Sevilla win in this tie.
It is hard, but it is at the San Mamés, so it's going to be very, very hard to actually not see Bilbao putting up a very big fight and maybe going all the way to the end. I could even see this one actually going into a high-scoring draw. Wouldn't surprise me at all.
The other games, Betis-Sociedad. Sociedad off the back of a nice win in La Liga.
You'd think Betis should maybe get the win, and you'd probably say under, say, maybe three goals. Maybe like a 1-0 type result here. It's going to be very tough to actually see Betis free-flowing and scoring many.
And Levante-Barcelona, they've had some nice clashes in recent seasons across the league. How do you think this one plays out? Barca maybe set to rest a couple of key players for the first leg at least.
Narrowly to Barcelona, maybe a 2-1 type result.
Barca beat them 5-0 last month, but they did have that 5-4 at this venue last season.
And that was
well.
The one that ended the undefeated run.
It was their only loss of the season. And Coupe de la Ligue action this morning, Rick. So Strasbourg defeated Lyon yesterday to make it to the semi-finals. They are joined by Monaco, who defeated Rennes on penalties, Bordeaux, who are through 1-0, and Guingamp, who eliminate Paris Saint-Germain, ending a 5-year straight triumph rate for PSG in this competition. 5 years in a row they'd won the Coupe de la Ligue. They are out at the quarterfinal stage of the competition to the bottom place side in Ligue 1.
It's very weird saying this, but we're going to finally see a little bit of action that is actually going to be very interesting in France.
Amazing.
And we've kept on talking about it. It's a Farmers League type comment here. I know I'm being a little bit harsh and facetious here, but we are actually going to see somebody else other than PSG finally lift some sort of silverware in France.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exciting for everyone, young and old, all football followers alike.
Who's your tip?
I'll stick with who I've always sort of stuck with, Monaco. They're not my team, but I've been to Monaco. I'm going to go with them.
That's good enough.
That's enough for me.
Bordeaux for me. Bordeaux will win, but Bordeaux, Strasbourg, Monaco and Guingamp. Now, before we get to a break and switch over to transfer talk, our producer's done the job.
Good work there.
Very, very quickly and promptly. So Wolves, this was the question that Rick asked. What is Wolves' record this season against the top six in England? Now, I can tell you, across the FA Cup and across the English Premier League, 3 wins, 3 draws, 2 defeats. 1-1 with City, followed by a 1-1 with United. They were the first two Premier League games of the season that they played against the top six. Then they had that 2-3 loss to Tottenham. Mm-hmm. Another 1-1 with Arsenal. So in their first four games against the Big Six, draws with City, United and Arsenal, and scored against all of them, which was promising. Then it was that famous 2-1 win against Chelsea, a 2-0 loss to the high-flying Liverpool, a 3-1 win at Tottenham, as we said, and a 2-1 win now over Liverpool in the FA Cup. So their form this season has been sensational. They've scored in 7 of the 8 games, all by that 2-0 loss against Liverpool at home. So I'm with you. I do give them an opportunity of going to City and maybe doing something, but just one win on their travels against the Big Six this season. Look, if the best Wolves side turn up, maybe they can win. They have defeated Spurs and Liverpool in the last few weeks.
Anything is possible with a Nuno Espirito Santo's man.
Anything is possible, but for me, they won't beat City. They won't.
I'm not ruling anything out.
I will be stunned.
I think we all will be stunned.
Given what we saw from City in the... Again, I'm reading into this a lot more than you, but the 16 goals they've scored in the last two games, City will not be conceding, let alone dropping points for me against Wolves. That's my prediction for the weekend.
We'll wait and see. We'll go through them all tomorrow.
We will. We'll be back. Transfer talk and more coming up. This is Afternoons right here on FNR Football Nation Radio.
You're listening to Afternoons on FNR. Football Nation Radio with Adriano De Monte and Rick D'Andrea.
Welcome back to Afternoons here on FNR Football Nation Radio. It is transfer time here on the program, as we'll do every day in the month of January. The January transfer period always throws up a few interesting rumours and reports on the transfer front. None more so for me. There have been some big acquisitions overnight, Rick. The Pavard deal to Munich is huge. Huge. We'll get into that again shortly. But one that's caught my eye. A reputable Argentinian source, TYC Sports, has all but confirmed that Wanda Nara, yes, the wife and agent of Mauro Icardi, the Inter captain, she has fallen out with the Nerazzurri. Now, this is big news for a player who Inter have been super reliant on for season after season after season. And the news is such that there are some big clubs linked. He's not arrived to training, been fined €115,000 for doing so. So for me, Rick, I feel the end is approaching for Icardi and Inter.
Well, Wanda has actually said that there are four clubs interested: Barcelona, Real Madrid, Paris Saint-Germain, and of course, Chelsea. It's just going to be interesting to see how her magic can be worked in two ways. Either that he can stay at Inter, or that a deal can be done raising enough money and enough transfer fee to command him and a move across. Simple as that.
Perfect. It's going to be interesting for Inter because they've been so reliant, as I said, on the Argentine. Without him, well, we talk about some of the big names who are linked from a striking perspective to other clubs. And I did say in the first hour to close that this could be the summer of the striker movement, where we've seen, of course, recently, no particular order, Icardi, Higuain, Morata, Dybala, Mbappe, Benzema, Bale. All of these attackers have been linked away from their clubs. But could you tell me one of those players who would be suited or potential for Inter to sign? Because I don't think any of them would join the club.
No.
For various reasons.
No, it's very, very difficult.
How do they replicate a player like Icardi?
Well, you can't replicate a player that's got, 20-plus goals for the last 5-6 seasons of his career.
Sixth highest goal scorer in their history as well.
Something like that. So
he's in the top 10 recently, I recall. But point being, none of those players would be on the move to Inter Milan.
Nope.
And none have been linked to Inter Milan. That is a problem. If they are to lose, they're most important. They spent big money on Raja Nainggolan in the summer. That hasn't worked. So they could potentially be without, on paper, arguably their two best players come next season. Nainggolan could be out the door soon, they're saying, but it's an enormous story breaking out of Argentina and Italy with the future of Icardi up in the air.
Be sad to see him leave Italy, but it could be to greener pastures for his career.
For him, for Inter, I'm a little fearful. Mm. Okay, let's talk Bayern Munich again, because this is incredible. Now, what they're doing, Pavard the first, €35 million. He'll join from Stuttgart at season's end. he'll be determined to keep Stuttgart up, ensure they have a strong end to the campaign. I think there's no issues with that. No conflict of interest with Bayern Munich and what they're doing, obviously at different ends of the table, but a massive opportunity for the 23-year-old, I believe, to put pen to paper. And Bayern Munich again poach another superstar from another club in the German Bundesliga.
Congratulations there to the World Cup winner, of course, with France, and that incredible strike that he actually did against Argentina in the round of 16. What a goal that was. But, yeah, no, it is. It's a good move, I feel, for Bayern Munich. They've targeted Pavard for at least a year, if not even, you know, maybe a little bit shorter.
They've known about him before the World Cup, don't worry about that.
No, they absolutely have, and they've obviously seen how he has actually flourished over the last year or two at Stuttgart. So congratulations on putting pen to paper on the move. And I think originally Stuttgart wanted 40. Yep. Bayern Munich didn't want to pay that figure. 35, well, I guess it's probably in and around the market. He's lost a little bit of value from the World Cup, cashed in, but good move nonetheless. Now I want to see how Bayern Munich transition away from that right back position and bring him in and obviously move Joshua Kimmich more centrally as a midfielder.
22 he is. He's 23 in March. So I think that's a good get.
Yep.
22 years of age, World Cup winner, top player, playing in the Bundesliga, so he's familiar with German football, and I think this is a smart switch. I think he'll settle in perfectly and go on to have a very successful career in Munich. He could be joined by a few other talented youngsters as well. Hudson-Odoi won't sign a new contract with Chelsea. That's what the reports are saying. That's courtesy of ESPN. And also, Cengiz Under continues to be linked from Roma. Again, Roma have valued Arsenal out of interest. Bayern Munich now the front runner for his signature. All of a sudden, Hudson-Odoi, Pavard, Under, Kingsley Coman stays fit. They've got a young, up-and-coming, very, very good outfit that could take them to greener pastures now going forward as well.
Let me throw in another name for you.
Go for it.
Eden Hazard's brother.
Okay, I know him.
Thorgan.
He's been linked.
He has been linked. He's been linked, though, to Borussia Dortmund to fill in the role that, of course, Christian Pulisic will be making vacant in June. I would not be surprised at all in the coming weeks if there is an offer, maybe around the 40 to 50 million euro mark.
From Munich.
From Munich to Borussia Mönchengladbach for Thorgan Hazard. He's had an incredibly sensational season thus far. I think he's the second or the third highest goal and assist scorer in Europe. He is incredible this time around. What he has been able to do with the black and whites of the Bundesliga outfit, you'd be silly not to inquire. You'd be silly not to negotiate. And if you're Bayern Munich, you'd be silly not to acquire him, especially when we've talked about the likes of Frank Ribery and, of course, Arjen Robben going. This revolution that we've been discussing for the last few minutes, why wouldn't you want to get a Hazard in your team?
Definitely worth entertaining that. And I'd be I'm with you. I'd be surprised if they didn't do exactly that.
The interest is there. It has to be there. Go out and get him. He'd be adding a lot of value to your team. And my word, you combine all them, you throw in Leon Goretzka, who you've already got, you throw in all the other names that are already at that club, Corentin Tirisso coming back from injury next season. My word, Bayern Munich.
As I said, Coman as well.
Coman as well,
fit.
Yeah.
They're looking good. They are looking good. But they still could lose one of their strikers, Lewandowski, who's still linked away. And again, this striker merry-go-round that could take place, he will be a part of that in some way, shape or form, even if just verbally. But he will also be, not on the market, but he will be discussed in the market when we talk about number nines potentially on the move, because there could be some vacancies at some top clubs. But again, it's a really interesting time at the moment in football. Real Madrid, Bayern Munich and Man United, particularly three heavyweights of world football, all in this transitional phase at the moment, needing to make some big calls. And I think Munich at the moment really leading the way. So a big get with Pavard and more to come, you would think. One of the big players in an attacking sense, but not in a striking sense, who's been linked away is Tottenham's Christian Eriksen. £225 million is the fee that has been put on his head by Daniel Levy, the Tottenham chairman. Again, we said this in the first hour, but unlikely that anyone will pay that sum of money. But good to see how important he is to Tottenham. And if Tottenham were ever to get that money, well, they would be quickly, they'll be very quick to sell. There's no doubt about that.
Well, you'd be silly not to sell. If you get the record transfer fee, as we saw with Gareth Bale when that came through, and he was the record at the time, you'd be silly not to say, thank you very much for your services, goodbye. I just would be interested to see if Tottenham would then make the same mistake twice they did with the Luka Modric and Gareth Bale money that came in.
Mm.
Would Lightning strike Tyce? Would they go and buy the farm or a farm, but ultimately then by year two basically sell it all off? I'd be interested to see how Levy would then approach.
They'd have to be wiser.
Well, they'd have to be, but who's to say that the six, seven, eight players that they would buy, which is the smarter way to do things, to improve your team, would be the right seven or eight players that would take Tottenham to the next level. That's the biggest question that I think would come should an Ericsson sale for 225 come up.
Yep. Well, Tottenham have always said this season they need to finish in the top four to keep hold of everything and everyone. But Ericsson will be one with Kane, of course, and Dele Alli, who have previously been linked to Madrid. And Tottenham and Madrid, we know they've got a nice little relationship brewing. That won't go away. It will not go away. A few other big players making headlines. De Jong, you weren't on board this one. Barca, reports out of Spain say Barca will announce Frankie De Jong, $86 million, €75 million. They're saying maybe now. And if they do announce him now, I believe it will be like the Pavard deal, which will be announced now, sign end of season, official.
Well, I don't think he or Matthias De Ligt will be sold in January. I've said this time and time again. So this will be a June sale, July 1.
Certainly.
Whatever date you want to put on it, but it will not be done between now and the 1st of February. You will see Frankie De Jong in a new jersey of any colour, of any suit. Frankie De Jong, I think, as good as he is, is anyone really worth that amount of money at 21? Sure, okay, you can argue Kylian Mbappe or whatever, but I still think at 21 years old, you are still developing, and who knows what ends up happening. I still think back, you know, Neymar and Gunzo is the perfect example.
Yep.
One turned out to be an incredible superstar, the other sort of floundered away. Cristiano Ronaldo and Nani, both at 19, went from Sporting across to Manchester United. One ultimately became the world's best footballer, second best, whatever argument you want to get into there. The other sort of, well, I guess he had a couple of good seasons, then he floundered away.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very hit and miss. Who's to say that Frankie de Jong, as much as he's valued at 75 million euros, pounds, dollars, whatever currency you want to put in front of them, won't flounder at Barcelona? We've seen these happen over the years with the Blaugrana. I'm not ruling it out. As much as I don't think he will flounder, I just have a big query as to the price tag.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, it is big money to put in. It is certainly big money to put in on an unproven talent. And no, he's not Mbappe.
No.
Well, not yet.
Not yet. But really? he's also only proven himself in the Eredivisie. And I'm not trying to put a kick into the Eredivisie, but it is a tier down.
That's right.
From across the big five.
Yep.
And it is a big tier down.
You make a very fair point. Now, the last one, the big, big story before we wrap up our transfer segment, Chelsea. Higuain is wanted by Mauricio Sarri. Cesc Fabregas has been agreed in principle to leave for Monaco. Sarri has blocked that move, and now Chelsea have blocked his wish to have Higuain join the club, despite terms being agreed with both players. According to reports, tension is brewing, they're saying.
A Mexican standoff.
This is not what you want for a Chelsea side who have had issues of their own on the pitch in recent weeks. And, well, they're not losing touching distance with the top few, but there's only one spot really available for Champions League football, and it's themselves, Arsenal and United, you feel, who are fighting it out for that spot. They can ill afford to have internal issues take anything away from their on-field potential.
So in your eyes, who should actually have the final say? Is it the coach with the players and what he feels he needs out of his team? Or is it the sporting director or, you know, the vice chairman or, you know, the higher up being that deals with the transfer side of and the recruitment of players?
If financially feasible, the coach. If it's not a ludicrous request, it should be the coach. Because, again, ultimately, we've seen clubs where the owners have had too much of a say as to what takes place, and we'll have those clubs gone. Not very well. United being one, according to reports. I think in this case, not that Sarri needs to get his way. They need to work together. That's the only way successful clubs operate. But in this case here, if Sarri doesn't want to offload Fabregas because he believes that offloading Fabregas without a replacement would not work well for his system, if his system doesn't work, Chelsea will not be successful.
Correct.
So he knows better than the owners, better than the directors, what he needs to be successful. And that's where I think if you have to pick one or the other, it has to be the coach. If he needs Higuain to score 15 second half of the season goals for the club, they need to go all out for Higuain. If the deal's already been agreed, make it happen, make the move happen, but don't formulate tension internally. That's not going to help anyone going forward in what will be a long second half of the season for Chelsea and a long 18 months ahead if they don't get back to the Champions League, because they desperately need that. So the Europa League, everything they're still in, the four competitions they're still in, they need to be at full strength and they need to follow Sarri's lead.
Here's one for you. If Morata does leave to Sevilla, as pretty much everyone is reporting, and no one is brought in.
Oh, they're in trouble.
How much are they in trouble?
Well, they're in trouble. Again, Morata has been inconsistent, but again, you've still got those players there to fill the spots. Giroud goes down and all of a sudden you're not left with anything.
There's false nines.
You're left with false nines, and that's not Sarri's style. So again, Higuain fits Sarri's style perfectly. He's had success. Higuain has had success in that style previously. It just makes sense to give the manager there what he needs if financially feasible for the club.
It's a tough one because, yeah, I agree. And I don't want to see Chelsea get into the situation where you are right. There's a bit of a standoff between chairman and coach. And ultimately, the chairman wins round one. But round two, round three, round four is what Chelsea need to look toward. And if the two of them aren't going to work together, well, who's going to pay the ultimate price? The club and possibly the coach.
I've just had a tweet come through, Rick. From Ricardo, good friend of ours.
Yes.
Just while on the topic of managers, this will take us to a break. We'll discuss this after the break. But listen to this, Rick. Corriere dello Sport in Italy reporting that Real Madrid and Manchester United, so speaking of two of those transition clubs that I said earlier, both want Massimiliano Allegri as their new coach next season.
Well, this is not unusual, especially for Real Madrid. We know that Real Madrid went to Juventus first time around for Allegri, didn't get him, he said no, and we know what then pursued and happened. Manchester United, well, it's another story right there.
Paratici is ready to offer €10 million to keep him next season. Net.
Ooh, a lot of money being spent on a coach.
I think Allegri will leave. I think Zidane will join Juventus, and I've been very strong on that for a long time. And if Zidane joins Juventus, we could see one of, if not both of, Pogba and Mbappe.
The pieces are falling into the story that you are talking.
They are. They are, Rick. That's a big, big story indeed. Let's get to a very quick break. We'll be back to take a quick look ahead to what's to come this weekend in the lead-up to a big show tomorrow. Stay tuned. This is Afternoons on FNR Football Nation Radio.
You're listening to Afternoons on FNR Football Nation Radio with Adriano De Monte and Rick D'Andrea.
Another very entertaining afternoons on FNR Football Nation Radio coming to an end. Don't worry, we'll be back tomorrow at the same time to do it again. But as we near the end, we'll start to look ahead to what's to come this weekend across the top club competitions as some of them resume, some still on break. Before we get there, Rick, you just want to wrap up a few of the other transfer stories that have been doing the rounds.
Yeah, there's a couple that are still floating around that we haven't had too much time or spent too much time talking about them over the last, 2 hours that we've been on air. The one that I want to bring to people's attention is Manuel Gabbiadini, the Southampton striker. It looks like a deal has finally been done. We were actually asking either late last week or early this week, where should he go, because he doesn't seem to be in Ralf Hasenhüttl's plans. And now that he's obviously joined the Saints. Well, I can tell you that he's actually joined Sampdoria on a six-month loan, and there's an option to buy him for €12 million, £10 million. So at least that way he could be going and returning to Italy.
Do they need him, Sampdoria?
Well, I guess it is cover for them up top. If Riccardo Saponara, who's coming back from injury, goes down again, if, dare I say it, Fabio Quagliarella goes down with injury, considering the hot streak that he's on, they at least have an extra body that they can actually rotate with, you know, out of the team or out of the strike force and use. So I think it is a good move for him. It also would be returning to Italy, familiar grounds for him, and it might give him a chance to put himself back into contention to maybe make the Italian national team in maybe 6 to 12 months.
All right, that one. Any others?
Well, the other one that I think we probably need to spend a little bit of time speaking about, and that's because of what Pepe has done with Porto and joining their, 48 hours ago is when we reported it, officially 24 or so. But Real Madrid have now started to come out and they actually want the centre-back pairing to Pepe in, of course, Eder Militao, who's had a sensational season. We saw what he's able to do in the Champions League, especially this season. But now he's been identified by Los Blancos as their prime target to partner a Rafael Varane. So the future post-Sergio Ramos, post the captain, is now starting to be considered by Los Blancos. And I thought I'd bring that to people's attention. We know what, you know, it's not a tricky trip to go from Portugal to Spain. It's not unusual to go from Porto to Real Madrid. Pepe did it. Won't be surprised if this one maybe does eventuate, say, in the June period. Maybe it gets spoken about. Maybe it even might get agreed this window, but then it actually comes to fruition July 1, 2019.
All right, some big, big stories there. About 5 minutes to go in the program. Quick look ahead to what's to come this weekend in La Liga, Ligue 1 and the Premier League. Bundesliga back? One more.
They come back the 19th, the 20th.
So Serie A and Bundesliga back next weekend. La Liga, Rick. Real away to Betis. That's going to be a nice match. Of course, both teams in action in the Copa del Rey. Betis still to play. They play tomorrow morning. But
Sociedad they take on.
Sociedad, that's right. But Real away to Betis. That will be a tricky trip for Los Blancos, but maybe they can take some confidence from that 3-0 over Leganes.
They can, but they'll also have one eye on what happened to them against Real Sociedad. That's the only thing, is they'll be thinking about that result and what's happened there and how they are able to overcome it. Betis are not an easy team. A little bit tricky, this one for me. Maybe a draw written all over it at this stage.
Atleti in action against Levante. They'll be looking to bounce back from another draw, as we touched on earlier. Really important they get the points there because, well, you'd expect that Barcelona will win. They're at home to Eibar.
Yeah, you'd think that. With Levante, they do obviously have to play in the Copa del Rey, so there's 24 hours less break when they do take on the Rojiblancos of Madrid. That is something else that also needs to be factored in. I'm sure the team will get rotated, but it is something that would go in the favour of Madrid, and maybe they actually might be able to get a rare away win.
Bilbao Sevilla in La Liga. They play in the Copa del Rey as well.
They're going to know each other very, very well by the end of this
weekend. That's always, I can't believe how often that happens. Mm. Copa del Rey meeting and La Liga meeting in the space of 72 hours, Rick.
I'm surprised that the LFP actually haven't tried to do a little bit more of that and line up a whole heap of these Copa del Rey fixtures when the two La Liga teams are meeting.
These two teams meet three times in 6 days. Legitimately, first leg, second leg, and a La Liga meeting. Athletic Bilbao, Sevilla, Bilbao, Sevilla, Sevilla, Bilbao. And then Sevilla goes to the Bernabeu.
If they don't know each other by the end of those 6 days, good luck to you.
Sevilla to win all three for me.
Oh, well, yes and no. Yes and no. I'll reserve. I think, you know what? I think Bilbao can get a result in one of the three.
Maybe the first leg that doesn't matter.
Maybe that one.
I think Sevilla playing far too well for them at the moment. Ligue 1 at the weekend, PSG away to Amiens. You're predicting a big win for PSG, who'll be looking to respond.
How many? That's how big I think this one's going to be. You can't lose to Gangomp in the Coupe de la Ligue and not expect a trouncing to occur, unfortunately, at the hands of Amiens by PSG.
Lyon were eliminated by Strasbourg in the Coupe de la Ligue. They will be hoping to back it up against Reims and get back on the winners list in Ligue 1. Do you think they can?
Narrowly. Maybe a 1-0. Reims are very tough to break down away from home.
Marseille-Monaco will be a big one as well to close out the round there. Two sides in, well, Monaco have some new faces, but two sides have been out of form all season. And finally, the Premier League. Well, no real big, big match bar one. It's a big one. It's United's first test under their new manager. It's Tottenham United at Wembley.
Huge. Talk about a litmus test. This is the one that will now tell us where exactly are Manchester United post Jose Mourinho.
I'll be baffled if Tottenham don't win this, Rick.
Big margin?
Not big margin, but they'll just win.
Can you see United scoring?
Yeah, I can. I think a 2-1 would be my prediction, but I just think Tottenham win the match. I watched United against Reading in the FA Cup, and I know they had 9 changes, but they still haven't played anyone. They've had 5 wins. Now, let's see where they're at. I hope they win for their sake, obviously, but I just think Tottenham are by far superior to United. Really, really excited about that match, though. Tottenham win. They distance themselves further from that chasing pack. It's just a very important game for both clubs. I think Tottenham are ready.
Agreed.
I think they're ready. A big week for them to be capped off there. Full previews of that match and more to come tomorrow here on the program. Other key EPL fixtures, though, include West Ham-Arsenal, a big one to open up the round. Brighton-Liverpool, Chelsea-Newcastle and City-Wolves, which Rick will be predicting a Wolves result.
Yes, absolutely. I'm going to stick my neck out on it and I'm going to say that Wolves at this stage will get a result against Manchester City.
All right. Find out why tomorrow. Same time, same place as always. But that's been a busy show, Rick. Always is when there are so many transfer stories doing the rounds. But tomorrow we'll be back at the same time to do it again. Just the very last one before we end, Rick. Gattuso, I promise you this fact. It was his birthday yesterday.
Happy birthday.
And to celebrate, there was all these figures and stats and numbers released to show that how good of a coach he's been. And in fact, in the last five AC Milan managers, so the five Milan managers since Allegri left for Juve, he has recorded the highest points tally, 1.74 points per game.
There you go. Congratulations to him. Let's see how long he stays at the club.
Not too long for me, unfortunately. All the best to him and more. We'll be back tomorrow at the same time to do it again. For now, though, for myself, Adriano Del Monte and Rick D'Andrea, this has been Afternoons here on FNR Football Nation Radio, your voice of football in Australia and right around the world. Until next time, it's goodbye for now.
You're listening to Afternoons on FNR, Football Nation Radio with Adriano Del Monte and Rick D'Andrea.